Hello, listeners. If you're hearing this, I'm going to assume you're at least interested in money and understanding the economy and finances. And some of us want our kids to have that knowledge, too. Check out Million Bazillion, Marketplace's award-winning kids podcast that breaks down money to help dollars make more sense. A whole new season is out now. Million Bazillion is presented in partnership with Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Greenlight helps kids and teens learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. You can learn more at greenlight.com/million. And tune in to Million Bazillion wherever you find your favorite podcast.
Hello, hello.
Hello, hello.
Maybe.
All right, I can hear Molly. Yeah.
Oh, good.
I got Molly.
Yeah.
I hear program.
I have Kai. I hear music.
Okay.
It's working.
All right,
hey,
good.
Everyone. I'm Molly Wood. Welcome back to Make Me Smart, where together we try to make sense of technoblige and connectivities.
People should know I'm doing this on my cell phone. I got Molly in one ear. I got my headphones in the other ear. I don't even know what's going on. Okay.
Sounds like it's a hollowed out shell Thursday for one of us.
It is. It absolutely is. I was actually thinking I'm really glad I don't have a beer in me now because I would not have patience for this. But, hopefully it'll be fixed by tomorrow.
Yeah.
You know.
Kai's got a little internet situation in case you guys have not picked up what he is laying down. Yeah. But it's going to sound amazing to you through the magic of what we call self-syncing in the radio biz.
That's right. That's right. Mm-hmm. Okay. So it is Hollowed Out Shell Thursday. I guess we do our standard deal, which is news. And then thanks to you and your internet surfing, a really good Make Me Smile today.
It's so good.
And then we'll be on our merry way. It's so good. It's so good. Okay. You get to go first. Go.
But we're not going to skip ahead. Okay, well, I will start with a little shorty, and then we'll get to the only topic on anyone's mind. And I was going to say if anyone cares about finance or the economy or, like, stock market, but really it's just everybody. But first, I do need to point out that WeWork is back. And WeWork, according to a Wall Street Journal News exclusive, is in talks to combine with a SPAC. One of those special interest acquisition companies that takes another company public through a little fancy tunnel of money. So they're talking about doing that or raising money privately. So one or the other. Either they're going to be unleashed on the public markets, heaven help us, or someone is going to give them a bunch more money, heaven help them. But yeah, WeWork still kicking. Still kicking.
Unbelievable. Truly unbelievable. God. Man.
I mean, I'm not going to lie. Like, it's been a pretty fun day on Twitter. It kind of has.
What was that guy's name? What was the guy who started WeWork's name? What was his name?
Adam Newman.
Thank you. Not that that's relevant. I just, he just keeps on coming back, or it just keeps on coming back.
Yep.
You got another one here. You got two entries.
I mean, I think we both have this same. I sense that you and I are both about to do a little bit of explaining.
Yes.
Vis-a-vis stonks.
That is correct.
Yeah.
Yes.
Which I like. There are a bunch of things, of course, percolating around the, I don't even know if we can call it the GameStop story anymore because it's spread to so many other stocks. Yeah. But the Wall Street Bets story, let's say. But the one that really interested me today, just as a side note to it all, I called a couple of people I know, one who used to run a hedge fund and one who's a financial advisor, and was like, hello, can you help me understand certain things about what is happening here so I can attempt to avoid narrative traps on the internet?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
One of those things that ended up being explained to me and then written about twice was that an interesting thing about Robinhood, app of the people, is when we say that Robinhood offers free trades and that it pushed all these other companies, Schwab and E-Trade and everybody else, to start offering free trades, whereas they used to charge you every time you made a trade, is that, of course, nothing is free. And that a good thing to know about the way in which Robinhood is not free is that the users, the individuals trading on Robinhood, are in no way, and Vice put this very well, are in no way the customer. The actual customer is Citadel, right? And these big companies that pay Robinhood for order flow, which is essentially millisecond early access to the orders that are being placed on the platform. And that this is what leads to that magical high-speed trading thing where you come along and, you know, are like, I'll buy the stock for $19.99. And then as soon as you hit execute, the price is all of a sudden $20. And then you're like, well, I guess I'll buy it at $20. But then the price is all of a sudden $20.01. And you can only buy it if you go all the way to $20.05. And that's because a computer that has paid for the right to find out what you're going to bid found out what you were going to bid and went ahead and bid a penny more. So you pay more. So basically, like, Robinhood has set up a business model that a lot of other companies have followed. Fidelity, I think, is one of the few that does not pay for order flow in order to provide free trades. But it's literally like a system that, like, they say doesn't, because there's different tricks about when that you can buy and who can offer the offerings and various complicated stock market things. But, like, it can also kind of screw the consumers, especially if there's a lot of volume of trade and they're trying to bid more and more and more money to drive a stock up. So when you hear that Robinhood halted trading in securities and that it was to protect the customers, it definitely was not to protect the customers doing the trading at all.
Yeah. It's always the little guy who gets squeezed, right? And that's just that's the way Wall Street is set up, which goes to the narrative of why this is happening in the first place and why these feelings are so visceral amongst those on Reddit and elsewhere by now, certainly, because lots more people know about it. That's what's going on, right? It's seriously visceral for a lot of these people.
Of course it is.
So yes, I'm glad you did that one. Yeah. Okay. So mine is also a little explainer, and it's prompted by something I said yesterday or maybe 2 days ago, whatever it was last time we talked about this, which is that you can lose 100%, right? On the downside, if you take the rent money and you buy GameStop and it goes to, you know, you pay $4.69 at the high today and it goes to $3.50, you're going to be out a bunch of money, right? But you fundamentally, as a retail investor without margin calls or any of that stuff, you can lose 100%. The problem with what's going on now is that losses on the upside – that is to say, those who have put the short squeeze, those who are shorting the stock, those losses can go to infinity. So I need to do a super quick explainer here on short selling because that's at the root of this thing, right? A bunch of big hedge funds looked at GameStop. God, they just changed the name of the company.
No one can say it right. Nobody.
It's unbelievable. Big hedge funds looked at the fundamentals of GameStop and said, nope, this stock is going to go down, and we're going to bet that it's going to go down. So here's the way shorting works. If you're betting that a company's share price is going to go down, you borrow a share. We're going to call it one share, but these come in much bigger lots. You borrow a share from somebody, and you sell it at $10 because that's what the market is. And since you're betting it can go down, you're betting that you can be able to, when time comes to repay that share, you're betting you can buy it back for $7, and you pocket the $3. Right. And you do that at scale and you make a bunch of money. And that is short selling. You have successfully shorted the stock. Okay. Mm-hmm. The catch, of course, is that stocks go up too. So if you sell that stock at $10 and the share price goes up, when time comes that you have to repay and it's $15, then you have to buy it back at $15 and you're out that $5. Now, you multiply that by 100,000 shares of GameStop, and instead of it going from $10 to $15, it goes from $10 to $469. I can't do the math on 469. I can't do the math on 469 times 100,000 in my head minus $10. But you can see really quickly how the losses go to infinity. Mm-hmm. Truly infinity. And that's what's driving some of these big hedge funds. It's crazy, right? And so they've had to shut down. They've had to do what's called close out their positions, and they've had to get new infusions of cash from other hedge funds. You can lose literally everything you have because you owe these shares, and you have to buy them back at the market price. And that is called a short squeeze. And that is what the folks on Reddit and now others have very successfully executed on a lot of these people who were short GameStop.
Right.
And I wanted to get that out there. Yeah.
There was a website earlier. I'm trying to find it really quickly. It's called, is the squeeze squoze yet.com.
It's
one of the, it has lots of explanations on how this whole thing works and in kind of, you know, hilarious Reddit-y vernacular. But you should know that as of January 28th, the squeeze has not been squoze.
No.
According to this website. Because I guess that means that the shorts have not begun to close their positions in substantial numbers. Melvin, right. Like a couple of them said that they'd covered it. Anyway, we're in the weeds now because all I do, by the way, is just hang out in the stonk weeds right now because this is so interesting. And then the other thing I want to raise, and I know that's a little sticky. We have had some disagreement about this in the past, but that at long last, the question of the Fed and interest rates and moral hazard has started to re-raise its head as a contributing factor to the exuberance, including the fact that, A, nobody can make any money saving money because interest rates are effectively zero, and, B, there's nowhere else to make a return. And so in the theory of unintended consequences, there's no question. You see, you know, big traders on CNBC saying, like, look, I mean, the Fed has a role to play here because –
When interest rates are zero,
and there's no other way to make money, this is what you get.
Totally agree. I think we disagree on the definition of moral hazard, which is a conversation for another time. But absolutely, yes, the Federal Reserve keeping interest rates at zero has made equities the only place to get a decent return, and that's why you see so much of this happening, right? It's why the Dow is at 30, whatever the heck thousand it is today. It's why the S&P has been at records for, you know, 10 days or a week or whatever, you know? Absolutely. Yeah. I don't doubt that.
It's why there's so much Bitcoin buying. It's why people are trying to like make money on, you know, art and wine. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's no other ways.
For sure.
All right. On to the happy place.
Okay.
Oh, this is a good one.
I'm turning this entire segment over to you because you found it and it's just extraordinary.
I can't take credit for it because it came to me via my family group chat. Family group chat is just like the best, the source of all good things. And this hopefully now incredibly famous actor and writer, Avalon Penrose, posted an explainer for the everyday person. And Marissa was kind enough to pull some cuts. I mean, I almost feel like we should play the whole thing in its entirety, but it's just because it's that magical. But let's hear a little bit of it to get the flavor.
From what I understand, there are these people who they have lots of money and they have hedges around their house and they go to the market, but it's like not a real market. It's metaphorical, but it's real. And they go, that company is not doing well. So I'm going to make it do worse. So they pull out some papers and they go, who wants to make a deal? They start making deals and they say, if this company's good, if it goes down, then I get money from you. And if it goes up, then I'll give you money. But they don't tell you that it's not going to go up. I mean, they will make it so it goes down. But then there was this online reading club that was like, well, not today. We want hedges too. And so they went into their bank accounts and then they also went to the market and they were like, buy, buy, buy of the company and changed it a lot. And so now the initial people, the hedges have to give their hedges, I think, to the other people. So if you have any questions, just let me know.
I think at one point Elon Musk responded to her. She was talking about like, there are these rich people and they have hedges in their yards. And he wrote back to her and said, a hedge fund that shorts is a shrubbery.
Ouch.
And I know we have complicated feelings about Elon Musk sometimes, but that was really funny. I just love that all of Twitter was basically like, try to explain stonks to anybody, to each other.
Near as I could tell, Near as I can tell, she's an actress here in L.A., I think, but I'm not really sure. She's got a voiceover role, and that's her thing. And she put this thing out yesterday, and it got an insane number of retweets and likes. And then, like, a couple hours later, she went back on Twitter and said, if I had known this was a thing that was going to go viral, I would have, like, combed my hair this morning. You know?
I mean, seriously? And she wrote back to Elon, by the way, and said her tweet was for business only and not jokes. Like, she's just handling it with absolute fire. She's gotten totally famous. I absolutely love it. Oh, yeah. Good for her.
It's really good.
Good.
It's really good
for her, and it's a
check it out. I'm yeah. Tony's going to put it on the show page. It's awesome. Okay.
Yes.
So that's it with this little makeshift tin can and string thing that we got going here from my shed in my backyard. Sorry, everybody. Anyway, we're done. Back tomorrow.
Sounds so pro.
Back tomorrow in some form with Economics on Tap, the YouTube live stream, all that good stuff. Me with a beer, Molly with, I don't know, tequila or something. 3:30 Eastern, 3:30 Pacific, 6:30 Eastern. Newsletters, please sign up for them. This week we're taking a closer look at the housing crisis in this country, which is real because, holy cow, incredible demand and shrinking supply. Marketplace.org/newsletters is where you do that.
Make Me Smart is produced and directed by Marissa Cabrera. Tony Wagner is our digital producer, and Erica Phillips writes our newsletters and the Make Me Smart skill on your smart device. It's just a test. It's a test every day.
Every single day. Ben Tolliday engineered today, got me hooked up with my cell phone. He also composed our theme music along with Daniel Ramirez. Donna Tam is the senior producer. The executive director of On Demand is Sitar Nieves.
Good job, Ben. Way to stay calm.
No joke, man. Meanwhile, I'm sitting here at 327 going, gosh, it's quiet.
I'm picturing him in a fighter jet. Like, he had like seven different switches and flips. And he was like, that's fine. Like, flippity, flippity, smack, smack, push, push. That's how it sounds when you fly an airplane. I don't know if you guys know. Flippity, flippity.
Yeah, it is. That's exactly how it sounds.
Swoosh, swoosh.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.